This is episode 386 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, May the 28th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McColl. On the show today, organisers of the Square Kilometre Array project have decided that both Australia and South Africa will jointly host the $2 billion radio telescope. The Facebook float begins to list. Apple's new iPad, otherwise known as the iPad 3, does some amazing things in the marketplace only after 2 months on the shelves. Chrome and Microsoft's Internet Explorer go head-to-head, and Telstra reissues 230,000 passwords. And it looks like there's some privacy reforms on the way too. Also today, Adam takes a look at Raspberry Pi. Don't forget there's the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week as well. Lena will keep us up to date with everything from the gaming world. First up though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Facebook's fall from grace, the Square Kilometre Array to be split between Australia, New Zealand and South Africa. Spotify launches locally, Julian Assange makes what might be a final public appearance in London, and the inventor of the wireless TV remote control dies at age 96. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Facebook shares are now trading for a lot less than their issue price of $38. Facebook's underwriters at Morgan Stanley had to step in on the first day of trading to prop up the share price, and shares have been down as much as 14% on day two of trading last week. Stocks fell 11% on Monday and a further 8.9% on Tuesday. The stock recovered a little on Wednesday and ended trading at just over $33 on Thursday. The Australian reported that the stock's decline had added to widespread anger among investors over the handling of the IPO after trading was disrupted by glitches on its first day. The ABC AM program's business editor, Peter Ryan.
Analysts worry the strategy of monetizing Facebook is a bit half-baked, and advertisers don't seem prepared to take the plunge. And this wasn't helped on the eve of the float when General Motors pulled its advertising, unconvinced it was doing much to sell cars.
Analysts have warned that poor timing with global markets, rumours of a botched deal, and a high share price compared to real earnings have all contributed to falls for Facebook, and that investors should not be surprised by the stock's performance. The Square Kilometre Array will be the largest and most capable radio telescope ever constructed, and for many months the scientific community has been waiting to find out where exactly it will be built. Last week it was announced that Australia, New Zealand and South Africa had been equally successful in their bids, and that the project would span all three countries. Mr. John Womersley, chairman of the SKA organisation based in Amsterdam, said that a dual site approach was the best way to go. The first phase of construction is scheduled to start in 2016. With most of the mid-frequency telescopes being constructed in South Africa. The SKA organisation says that further dishes will be built in the remote Murchison Shire of Western Australia, 600 kilometres northeast of Perth, to operate in the low-frequency radio band. The CSIRO's Professor Brian Boyle told the ABC's AM program that everyone was a winner with the SKA's construction over three countries.
We'll be able to gather information 10,000 times quicker than we've ever been able to do. So we'll not only be able to answer some of the fundamental questions of 21st century astronomy and physics, dark matter, dark energy, be able to test theories of Einstein and Hawking to their limits. But of course, probably the greatest transformational scientific breakthrough will be a question that we haven't even thought of yet.
Gizmodo says the $2 billion 3,000-dish radio telescope will be used to assist investigation of the origins of the universe, the properties of dark matter, as well as the role of magnetism in the cosmos and the nature of gravity. The world's largest online music streaming service, Spotify, has launched in Australia. Amid a turbulent political landscape, overshadowed by outstanding court appeals between Optus and the AFL, NRL and Telstra consortium, Spotify now offers online subscription-based music or free music with recorded advertisements. Spotify users can choose to listen to music from a vast library of 16 million songs by streaming them from the internet without actually copying any of the content. Spotify's Managing Director for Australia and New Zealand, Ms. Kate Vale, said tens of thousands had registered their interest online ahead of last week's launch. She said Spotify's business model would only have a positive impact on the local music industry. Here's Ms. Vale on ABC Radio last week.
In any market where we launch, there's a huge number of people illegally downloading music. They're the people that we want to get on board to our service, and that's why we have a free tier and a free platform so people can come and try the service.
Some users were disheartened by Spotify's requirement to log on with a Facebook account, although Ms. Vale said Spotify believes music is a very social experience and that this was a standard authentication model used internationally. Founder of the international whistleblower website WikiLeaks, Mr. Julian Assange, has made what might be a final public appearance in London. Ahead of a Swedish extradition application, Mr. Assange appeared at the film premiere of Shadows of Liberty in London, wearing a Guy Fawkes mask synonymous with the hacking collective Anonymous. Mr. Assange has a role in the movie, which tackles the disintegration of press freedom in the United States. The extradition application is for Mr. Assange to face allegations of sexual assault after he was accused of raping a woman in Stockholm in 2010. And the inventor of the first wireless television remote control, Eugene Polley, has died at the age of 96. Mr. Polley worked for Zenith Electronics for 47 years. He built the first Flashmatic, a TV remote shaped like a ray gun, which first sold in 1955. The curator of information technology at Sydney's Powerhouse Museum is Mr. Campbell Bickerstaff. On ABC Radio, Mr. Bickerstaff said the humble remote hadn't really changed all that much in the last 50 years.
We're all hoping that one day someone's going to come up with an elegant solution to what the remote control for your home entertainment system's going to be, and it won't be, you know, something with, you know, more than three or four buttons on it.
Eugene Polley filed 18 patents in his lifetime, but will best be remembered for the simple infrared remote control. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Facebook lists. That's funny on a couple of different levels.
That is, yes.
Anyway, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about other things.
Exciting times. Very exciting times.
You know, strictly, that's not true.
I know.
Are you serious? A television pilot?
Television program.
You'll wonder who ate Lena if I bring those in.
Spoilers.
No.
Okay. But if you go to 65.254.250.105, it'll work.
Okay, good. Whinge of haters.
I'd rather go to jail, to be honest.
All right, we've gone from humour, we're going to have a bit of a downer, then we're going back to astonishment.
The bit you put in the ad is the bit where it works for a change.
Not bad in here tonight.
The Oscar goes to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lol.
Lol.
Didn't they used to make anvils for roadrunners?
That's a good way of doing it. If you don't like the product, don't buy it. Nick.
Or if you've got a passport account.
That's very funny.
Have I missed the point here somewhere?
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Andrew McComb. In front of me, three of the best and capable people around.
That we can find.
Yeah. Including Ms. Lena Van Deventer.
Hello. Ms. There was lots of mzzing going on in the news.
There was mzzing there everywhere, wasn't there? Hello, Dr. Wrong.
Hello there.
And I see you've started off the tweet fest tonight with the hashtag MasterChef.
Yeah, I did. I said, hey, if you're watching that Master Chief program, switch it off now and come and join us.
I like that. That's called program hijacking.
It is.
So welcome to all of our MasterChef viewers this evening.
That's right. Who saw the MasterChef tweet there. It's good to have you on board.
Apologies to those who are probably listening to us not live. But anyway, Graham, hello.
Hello, Andrew.
How's things?
Very good, thanks.
Tweeting already, are you?
No, catching up on my emails.
That's to say, you had the phone out already. I thought he was tweeting or catching up with Dr. Ron's tweet. Well, what a week it's been. Facebook, listing, literally. Optus have signed up with NBN. Ah, look, it's all happening.
Square exciting. Kilometre Array, the the location of its construction was announced. We were hoping it was going to be Australia, but it's
everyone's a winner.
Split across three sites. That was unexpected.
Yeah, it was. Do you want to talk about it? The SKA. Five key science drivers for the SKA have been identified as the cradle of life.
Ooh.
This project will explore whether there are Earth-like planets around other stars, which I think they've already worked out. There's one which I think someone, GD in our chat's probably the man to sort of clarify this, but I think there is an Earth-like planet, but it's a bit far.
Krypton.
Really? We've been watching too many Marvel comics. Superman.
DC.
Yeah.
DC.
Sorry.
Yes. Jeez.
Take him anywhere but to a comic convention, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, don't take me to a comic book shop.
No.
Well, the SKA organisation's based in Amsterdam, and we've been waiting for months and months for a decision about where the square kilometre array was going to be built. This is a massive concoction of telescopes, radio telescopes.
Yeah.
And combined, it's going to make one big, very large telescope. What they've decided is they're actually going to split the site in three. So they're going to have part of it in South Africa, part of it in Australia, in WA, and part of it in New Zealand.
How do they split it?
Most of it in South Africa, to be fair.
I think they're splitting it in frequencies, aren't they? Is that how it works? So they've got the...
The lower frequencies were going to be here in WA.
Yeah.
And the...
It's cleaner air, like as in less... electromagnetic radiation, noise,
less
in other words.
Electromagnetic pollution.
Yes, a better way of putting it.
And the medium radio band frequencies are going to be in the site in South Africa. I'm not sure what's going at New Zealand. I'm not sure exactly.
Yes.
Model telescopes in
maybe
the chat room.
Maybe it's just, you know how you can triangulate it and turn it into one big antenna? Maybe that's just the...
Well, that's the premise for the whole project.
Turn the whole globe into one great big antenna.
Maybe.
The other thing it's going to do, it's going to be probing the dark ages. This is from the SKA site, by the way. If you want to learn more about it, just head off there to ska.gov.au. Probing the dark ages, it'll explore the first black holes and stars. Sounds pretty exciting, doesn't
Ooh.
It? The origin and evolution of cosmic magnetism. And no, it's not all about you, Lena.
Ha ha. Boom boom.
Strong field tests of gravity using pulsars and black holes, and galaxy evolution, cosmology, and dark matter.
Cool.
Dark matter. Now, this is an interesting concept, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Terrifying concept, actually.
Yeah, it's not good.
It freaks me out.
Does it? Why?
Because it's scary.
Oh.
Because everything that goes into the black hole does not come out. It ceases to exist.
Yeah, you're watching too many science fiction programs.
Maybe.
Actually, with Hawking radiation, all the energy that goes into the black hole does come out. It's only the information that's lost.
Ooh. Well, I'd be nothing without my information. Getting all metaphysical now.
Now, in the news in the news tonight, Dr. Ron mentioned that the man who invented the remote control, infrared remote control, passed away during the course of the week. A great achievement. But the very first one looked like a phaser out of Star Trek. Did you know?
No, I didn't. I didn't know that.
No, neither did I until I read up about it.
Who's been watching too much Star Trek now?
Oh, exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, one of the other
BD in our chat room says
BD.
Yes, Eugene Polly was
BD. Hello, BD.
Was the inventor. He says, was he found under a couch cushion? Oh, BD, that's terrible.
Oh, too soon.
Come and join us in the chat. chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you're listening live. If you're not listening live, come and check out the show notes on the forum. I'm not going to tell you the address of the forum. You know where that is.
Good.
If you don't, you'll work it out.
Before we go to Coro, something else that is... You know how Google puts such great pictures up on Google search?
The Google Doodle.
The Google Doodle. There was a fantastic one the other day. Is that what you were about to talk about?
No, I'm going to talk about today's one.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Yes.
Today's one is basically a tribute to an Australian...
It might be last Monday's one.
Last Monday's one?
Yes.
Okay.
If you're listening later in the week.
Oh, it could be, yes. I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Yes, but yes. Figuratively, bang the rocks together, guys.
Still haven't worked this out, have you?
No, I'm not a good time traveller either. Don't send me to a comic book shop where there's a time traveller, I'm dead.
But the irony is you are such a good time traveller. You do it every week without realising.
Yeah.
Oh, now you're going to do my head in. Can I just read this?
Please.
And then we'll throw it over to you.
Do what you do best.
Ruby Payne Scott was an Australian pioneer in radio physics and radio astronomy and was the first female radio astronomer. Now, she was an interesting character. I was reading up on her. The more I read about her, the more I thought, wow, what an interesting lady. She worked for the CSIR, which they eventually later put an O on the end of it.
They organised themselves.
Yeah, and she, yeah, exactly. But she was pretty instrumental in discovering, you know, sun things and
sun
astronomy.
Things.
Yeah, bursts in particular, sunbursts and stuff. But she's also
like solar flares.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
But she's also a communist.
Okay.
And we had commos in Australia back then. She was a Sydney sider,
we
lived
still
in
do.
Sydney. Yeah, but
hello, Julia, if you're listening.
Oh. Ouch.
That's going to have to come out of the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
Is the radio station's license looking too, by the way?
Yeah. Sorry. Oops.
Now, nice clean
Didn't mean to say that at all.
Nice clean in here. Okay. During World War II, she was engaged in top secret investigations about radar, too. How about that?
Mm. Fantastic.
So she did all sorts of good things. What an amazing lady. And an Australian.
Yay.
Living. Not, well, she lived in Sydney, and from 1912 to 1981, she died just before her 69th birthday. So, well done.
There you go.
That's what I like about the Google Doodle. You actually learn some interesting
sometimes
things.
Sometimes you do learn interesting things, yeah.
But sometimes the Google Doodle is just for fun.
Like?
Like there was an analog synthesizer on last week. Is that the one you saw? Did you
well, not just any old analog synthesizer.
It was a Moog one.
It was a relatively faithful attempt at creating a mini Moog.
And how much time did you waste on that? Because you could record what you were doing.
Oh, yes.
And you
so had a tape recorder attached and a four-track recorder, so you could do four-track recordings and link to them. It was absolutely fantastic. Celebrating Dr. Robert Moog's, the 100th anniversary of his birth.
Where would Rick Wakeman be without someone like that? He was one of those...
Absolutely nowhere.
...pioneering, you know, and Brian Eno, he was a big man, and he loved playing... He went on with Peter Gabriel and...
Dr. Moog came first. He was the one who made it... made the a practical instrument that led to a lot of the other future developments in the field.
Absolutely fantastic.
So that was a really... And I'm sure it's still there. Google have a history of
their... They do, don't they?
Their Google Doodles, so you can probably go back and still find it.
Yeah, keep an eye out for the Google
Doodles. So there's an
Google
archive, Doodles. Is there, Graham? I didn't know that.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And if you actually go to Google in Mountain View, all of their art is on the wall. They pin it up. I don't know whether they still do it, but they did when I was there.
The physical artwork
all
is
the
on
doodles
display.
Are there. Yeah, 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 because a lot of people send it in. It used to start off as a competition, remember?
Do they have, like...
Moogle
tours,
Doodle.
You can tourists can go there and.
I don't think so, but you never know. You're like in a big city. If there's anyone over there listening, let us know.
Can you just rock on up to Google headquarters and say, "Hi, I'm here."
It's a bit like going to a TV station or something like that. You've got to sign in and do all that DNA swabby bit sort of thing. So you just It might have changed since I was there, but hello to all the guys in Google.
Google.com/doodles.
Yeah.
Ah. Oh, cool. I can see it on your computer. Big list of all the good ones.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back and have a play with that Moog synthesizer one because I missed that
hopefully
during the week.
Did you?
It was very cool.
They're really good fun. You got to do it. That's why you should have, when you boot your browser up in the morning, there he goes. The actual Google page, you need to have it as one of your tabs so you can see what they've got.
So you see it for the one for the day when you start in the morning. Freak in our chat room says you could record with it too,
Yeah, we did. Absolutely,
Where were you? We were just talking about that. That's Graham said it was a four-track recorder.
See, it was a four-track recorder attached to it.
Oh, but when you said that, I didn't realise you could actually record with it.
You hit track one there and you hit record and you go...
No.
And then you can play it back.
And then you can play it back. And then you hit track two, and you hit record, and it'll play track one while you record track two.
So you can build up your tracks.
Do some multi-tracking.
Oh my.
And then you can play them both together.
You have a talent, Graham.
If you've got an hour, if you've got an hour to kill, go and visit the Google site. We should do this, shouldn't we?
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
If you can get a word in edgeways tonight.
feedback@techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with the panellists. Adabear, via the contact form,
Adabear
says, "Hi guys, love the show. I have a news tip here that you can't miss."
Ooh.
He's put a link there, which I'll put in the show notes. Rickroll meme destroyed by copyright takedown. Has anyone here ever been Rickrolled?
Yes.
Yeah,
but it was back up long before we found out about it.
It was.
So it's all back there. Nothing to worry about. Don't panic. Move along. Phew. Nothing to see here.
Don't panic.
They put it back up, have they?
Yeah. It went straight back up, yeah.
Because they're never going to let us down.
No, I've had to...
They're never going to... Was rumoured that AVG removed the clip, the YouTube clip that everyone uses as the the landing clip for Rick Astley.
That's right. Yes.
With a lazy 62 million views at the moment.
Only six, and then why did AVG take it down? Why did they have a problem with it?
Well, this was the rumor, but it's yes.
They wanted to figure out how to make money out of it.
Maybe.
Hey, for the promo, Leans, can you sing a few verses for us?
No.
Oh, damn.
No, I shall not. Oh, Graham just rickrolled us.
He just rickrolled the entire podcast, the entire program. Adabear says, tech just isn't tech without a little Rick Astley and, I guess, some lolcats. Anyway, great show. Cheers, Adrian, a.k.a. Adabear.
Thanks, Adrian.
Can I tell you, before we move on, can I tell you about my favourite rickroll ever?
Tell us, Graham.
On a well-known chat program, one of my friends on that had a curious status that was clearly written in Latin. So, not knowing just enough Latin to know that I didn't know enough Latin, I started Googling Latin dictionaries and translating it word by word and trying to figure out what it was. After about half an hour's solid work, I realised that it was the lyrics to that particular song
in Latin.
So
no.
So I was rickrolled in Latin.
Nice.
Fantastic. I learnt my best Latin thanks to Monty Python.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm afraid to ask.
Oh, are you? No. It was just, you know. Yeah.
Romans, they go the houses.
Oh, that's yes. Them. Yeah.
Back conjugate in the verb to go.
That's it. Let me speak to them, Pontius.
Weigh in via direct email says, hi, guys.
Says.
Good work on the show.
How come you can pronounce kilometre correctly, which no one else in the universe seems to be able to do?
Kilometre.
But you can't. Thank you. But you can't say says.
What?
What? Moving on.
Huh?
Yeah.
Right.
Australia.
It's more smileys, Lena. Look.
There's all the smileys.
And he says,
yes, more smileys.
I just wanted to add to the discussion brought up by Adam's from the couch last week, the practice of networks getting viewers to commit to a show and then pulling the carpet out from under their feet is not a new thing.
Mm. No, it's not.
In particular to science fiction shows. One network notoriously guilty of this travesty is the Sci-Fi Channel, which ran some of my all-time favourite shows. A few examples to illustrate my point. In 2006, the Sci-Fi Channel cancelled Stargate SG-1 in Season 10, halfway through one of their most compelling story arcs.
Arcs.
Leaving many viewers unsatisfied with the ending.
Don't go there.
They did it again in 2008 when they cancelled Stargate Atlantis after 5 seasons. Yes, there is a common theme running here. Only to announce a third Stargate series named Stargate Universe, promising that the new series would be more gritty, real and darker than the others. A lot of fans were quite cynical at the time, but still bought into the series with some enthusiasm. And guess what happened 2 seasons into that show? They cancelled it, just as the show's mythology was drawing us all in and the writers were hitting their strides with intriguing storylines. Sorry about the long rant, but I feel passionate enough about my sci-fi to jump into the discussion and bring it to everyone's attention. Keep up the great work, guys and gal. Looking forward to Lena's review of Diablo 3. Ah, the RSI that comes with the game as a free gift.
Yes.
Regards, Wayin.
Thanks, Wayin.
Mm. I agree with almost every word of that. The original Stargate SG-1, they did have a fairly good run.
Season 10. Like
10 seasons.
That's insane.
I could never get into SGI.
SG-1.
That might be why. You're looking at the wrong thing.
Oh, okay.
Who knows what you were watching?
No, well, they neatly wrapped up their main storyline that had been going for seasons and seasons and seasons and were unexpectedly renewed for another season and then had to develop this whole new storyline, which is the storyline that never quite got finished. So, yeah, it was an interesting story. It was a great series, though.
Wayin, we're glad you agree with us. It is a disgrace. And, yeah, Adam's view from the couch last week was all
about... But, of course, it goes all the way back to, Star Trek. The original Star Trek series was cancelled in its third season.
Was it?
How
many eps in did it get?
Oh, I can't remember, though, but they were just producing really phenomenally great... This is sarcasm, guys, for those who don't know. Episodes like Spock's Brain.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Family Guy got cancelled, too. A couple years in, and it was mainly because their time slot kept getting moved around, and so their viewership dropped off, and then they got cancelled, but everyone was really upset when they got cancelled, because it wasn't their fault, it wasn't because they didn't like the show, it was just because it kept moving around the time slot.
They couldn't find it when they were ready to watch it.
Yeah.
They didn't know where it was.
So they brought it back.
Mountain Wombat. Last but not least, Mountain Wombat, via the contact form, says, I had great trouble setting up a new email connection for a customer new to Big Pond. This probably doesn't surprise many of us, Mountain Wombat. Big Pond has farmed its email out to Microsoft's Live Messenger.
Yeah.
This means your privacy is now dependent on servers located offshore and under US law. Even worse, the support process is now subject to fights between Telstra and Microsoft, two companies known for their care and support of end users. I suspect that's he's being a little bit cynical there. Over the 3 hours it took to get a customer's email working, the Big Pond tech mentioned that the migration process was not going smoothly. The only bright spot in the whole process was discovering the Big Pond tech, based in an offshore call center, was having trouble understanding the Microsoft tech, who was also based in another offshore call center. Cheers, Paul, a.k.a. Mountain Wombat. Yeah, don't use Microsoft Mail. That's
well, you don't
bad.
Get a choice these days.
Big Pond. You just have to use
get
something
a,
else.
Go and get a domain somewhere or register your own domain.
Get it hosted and, collect
and not
mail.
With Big Set up Pond. Your own thing. Don't use Big Pond.
No.
Don't use Big Pond for anything.
Hi, Craig, if you're listening.
It's all bad.
Follows us on Twitter.
It's the end in tears. That's all the correspondence, Andrew. And the way to communicate with us, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
This is an Olympic year, if you weren't aware of it. Did you know?
Yes.
Apparently, in the UK, they're going to be doing some running.
Did you watch Eurovision last night? Anytime anyone from England spoke, they said Olympic, 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 Olympic. They just kept spruiking it the whole time.
Really?
They're very excited.
They must be. I saw Doctor Who running with the torch on BBC. From Cardiff to somewhere. He went 100 metres down the road or something.
It was Matt Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, but everyone wanted David Tennant to be doing it. And they said, yeah, we'll make the doctor do it. And they're like, not that doctor. The previous one. Poor Matt Smith.
Poor Matt.
But he ran.
Yeah. Anyway, the British agencies... the British and the US agencies are bracing for Olympic cyber attacks. Here we go. Apparently they're just getting all tense. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security's cybersecurity wing warned in a bulletin that incidents could range from hacktivist attacks against the Olympic sponsors to common phishing or black hat search engine optimization, which basically means people come and fish based on a result and things like that of a race or an event or something like that. So be wary. It's a shame when it comes to those sort of things. But, yeah, that's what they do. I got my first phishing spam today from a bank, which I hadn't seen. Because I think we talked about this last week. We hadn't seen any bank spam for a while.
They were purporting to be from a bank, but it wasn't a real bank.
Yeah, correct. Because it chucks it in your junk folder, which is all good and fine. But the junk folder reveals all the links.
Do you use Gmail?
No.
Okay. I use Gmail.
I use Gmail, but that's where it goes after I've read it.
Right. Okay. No, Gmail front ends all of my email, and that does a pretty good job of working out what's phishing and what's spam and what's
a front end which is a little bit more controllable, as Graham's a testament to. I can actually program in certain domains or users and keywords, and none shall pass unless you have a shrubbery.
So how many emails do you get a day? How many messages?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Oh, not many. Two or three?
Two or three. Yep. Yes. Yeah. That many, actually.
That many. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, I'll probably get about 100 a day, and of those, I'll probably see 15, I guess, maybe a little bit more.
15 what?
15 legitimate ones. The rest just get spammed by Gmail.
I thought you said, okay, so Gmail shows you what gets put into the trash can
folder, which I check once every few days or once a week, just to make sure I haven't missed anything that's legitimate.
Oh, very good. Now, Graham, you were a bit excited about this earlier on this evening. The ACCC approves Optus's NBN deal.
Ah, yes. Optus have done a deal with the NBN to migrate customers off its, what they call their HFC network, which is hybrid fibre and coax. So it's the black cables that they strung down the streets for...
Are they going to take them down?
Pay TV and...
They look hideous. The Possum Superhighways.
Yeah, they probably won't go and take them down because it would just be expensive to go and take them down. But
you need a car accident down the end of the street to pull it down.
I gather that what they're going to do is, as the NBN rolls out, they'll migrate customers off their coax network onto the NBN.
So as NBN becomes available in a location, and if Optus have customers already on HFC, they're going to move them
onto the
migrate
NBN.
Them across to the NBN. That'd be good.
Yeah. Because, as they quite rightly say, there's no need to maintain the coax and fibre network alongside a really good fibre-to-the-home network.
It
would be crazy. So
does that mean they won't be maintaining that network any longer?
That's
or they'll,
right,
they'll
yes.
wind it back? Oh,
yeah.
Bad luck, Lena.
Sorry?
No, nothing. But it, they'll...
Pay attention.
But they...
Are you in your fancy Lena's, 180 Lena will, megabits per second
Lena
internet?
Will be fine yeah. because she'll have that network until she moves on to the NBN.
Mm. That's it. Yeah.
In fact, it's probably going to get faster because people will migrate off and
yeah.
allow more bandwidth.
Well, maybe.
On that.
Yeah.
There you go. Go sign up with Optus for a bit. Might work.
Although the bottlenecks on that network tend to be local, so...
Oh, as in more people using the network at one time creates...
Well, it's the people right in your street and just around the corner from you that slow you down, not the people in a completely different area that slow you down on that network.
Cool.
In yelling distance.
Yeah, that's
so you can
the
open
one.
Up the window and say, get off the internet!
Yeah, no, you just
my
sneak
turn.
Out. You know those really long things for cutting branches off trees? You sneak
yeah.
out.
Yeah, the garden shears. Yeah. They're
yeah,
good,
the
aren't they?
Yeah, that'll free up a bit of bandwidth.
Make sure that they've got rubber grips on them so you don't hurt yourself.
Really? Why would you hurt yourself with...
Because if you're cutting cables with metal...
Well, only if you cut...
If you cut the wrong one, yes. Yeah.
We do not condone this. This is entirely meant as a joke.
You can always...
Do not go out cutting people's cables.
No.
You can always tell the people that have been either disgruntled with an HFC service, whether it be Telstra's or Optus's, because it's normally wound around the local power pole and it's got a bit of insulation or duct tape holding it there because they've cut it off.
Yeah, because the Optus... Because they're a carrier, they're not required to remove it. They leave it there just in case that you ever want to reconnect or someone else who lives there later on wants to reconnect the service.
Yeah.
They leave the lead in from the street to the house.
I took mine out.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
Why? Because I had four of them and I only wanted one. The possums were using it, so I had to go.
I wouldn't admit that.
Oh, okay. I won't. I didn't do it.
No.
All right, that's good. Well,
but
that's good
means
news.
That
for...
If you ever want to reconnect it or someone who else
I wouldn't
want
to do that. I'll just wait for the fibre.
Then you'd have to pay a big fee to have it repaired.
Okay. If they want the business.
Mm.
It'll all be changed by then anyway.
Yeah.
Speaking of internet.
Yes.
Mr. Hackett stepped down from Internode. Walked across
Simon Hackett.
Yeah, walked across the corridor and joined up with a Hi-Net today.
Well, he used to run... Internode.
He built it from the ground up, didn't he?
Yeah. But now he's given up that position and he hasn't gone to the equivalent position at IINet. He's gone onto the board at IINet.
Ah, okay.
So,
cushy job.
That's exactly right. I think he's reached the cushy portion of his career, I think.
Okay. So Internode, which was based in Adelaide. Moving across to IINet. And of course, I think you were saying also this evening that all the Internode customers who are probably on resold Telstra or resold other ISP-type sort of packages are now moving up and connecting up with iiNet.
Well, if the customer was an iiNet, an Internode customer, and they're on a Big Pond resold or an Optus resold DSLAM because Internode didn't have a DSLAM in their local exchange, if iiNet do have a DSLAM in their exchange, Internode will move them onto that DSLAM and they get all the Internode features. And the really good pricing that goes with it too. So they've been moving customers across, and I've noticed several customers of mine that have got messages saying your service has been upgraded. It's just happened.
Oh, okay. So they do it without.
Yeah, they
so
just do it.
So you can churn without being interrupted. Is that right? Because you know when you ring up, and unless it was a fast churn thing,
very very minimal interruption. Yeah,
you could be without internet for days, if not weeks. But now you can do it just like that.
Not the way they're doing these ones.
Well, yeah, good.
Mm.
So how did your customers find out about it? In an email, or did they send them a text or something, or did they ring them up?
The ones I've seen of there's been both email and text notifications. In Internode, I find are really good with communication. They do tend to use the different modes of communication. Which
Internode, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. IINet had an outage today in Victoria. Took out most of Victoria for about half an hour, sort of in the latter part of the afternoon.
Ouch. What sort of outage?
You couldn't connect to anything. No mail, no web.
Ooh.
The ADSL line would sync, but other than that was it. And then after that, they sent an email saying there was problems after they fixed it.
So when you say there was no mail or no web, what to their services or just the internet connection was completely gone?
I could see the DSL service coming in.
Yep.
So you could see the line was connected and it was syncing. The green light on the modem was
working. Was it authenticating?
No.
Maybe it's an authentication problem.
No, yeah, to come back and I didn't have an IP address on my modem or anything like that. It said just training and despite ADSL syncing, there was just, it didn't talk to the other end.
So, nasty.
Yeah, well, things like that happen from time to time. In fact, that's probably one of the very first times I've actually noticed it in all the years I've been with those guys.
Did you find out what the cause was, Andrew?
They don't tell you that.
Well, sometimes the iron, it's usually pretty good.
Oh, I might have been Mr. Hackett walking across the hallway. I don't know.
Maybe. So those two companies are the same company now.
Yes.
It's been in the offing for a while, hasn't it?
It has. It has. Hey, before we go to the break, do you want to talk a bit about Facebook? You mentioned them briefly in the news, Dr. Ron.
Facebook's been unfriended.
It has been unfriended.
Lol.
And all the other jokes that go with it, listing
to starboard, yeah,
to
yeah.
port.
They didn't have a good week, their first week of trade.
You should look them up now and see what they're worth on Google.
Well, they won't have started trading yet on the NASDAQ because it'll still be the weekend in the United States when we're recording this. But yeah, they were down by as much as 14% last week. So the mum and dad investors weren't too impressed with that. Lots of short selling going on, lots of that sort of stuff. You know, yep. where people actually, I'm not a stockbroker, I don't know what short selling is, but it's where they trade on losses, and they trade on anticipated losses. So there's people still making money out of it, but it's not people like you and me.
So the people who predicted it was going to go down and did their trading accordingly, they would have won their bets.
They would have won their bets. You're right, Graham. But analysts have warned, yeah, look.
They propped it up artificially too,
the markets. Yeah, deals.
That's what got everyone's noses out of joint because it was artificially propped up. There was results that they chose not to reveal except to institutional investors, I believe, as opposed to the general public.
Yeah, and we're talking about this just before the program as well, out in the green room there. The only way Facebook can make money is by throwing ads at people. And if the ads don't work, like General Motors in the United States just pulled all their advertising a matter of moments before the IPO happened, and the General Motors said, "Look, we're not convinced that it's actually helping. It's not selling cars.
It's $10 million worth of advertising, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah. So, on the eve of the floats, General Motors pulled the advertising campaign on the eve of the IPO.
Yeah.
So, yeah, unless they make money by just throwing ads at people, and mind you, they can throw ads at people in a very clever way, and it's not just a random shotgun sort of approach. They are actually looking at, you know, if you change your relationship status from single to engaged or something, then you're going to start seeing a lot of, you know, ads in your on the right hand side of your Facebook page for wedding dresses and engagement rings and that sort of stuff. So
that won't be annoying.
Well, no, it wouldn't be annoying at all. So they watch all of your activity and they watch what you're posting. They look at keywords and they target their campaigns very, very carefully and in a very clever way. But failing that, how do they make money? I mean, short of charging people to sign up for the service like LinkedIn does, I don't know how they can make money.
They're not an Apple. And if you look at what Apple sell, even Microsoft, they all have a div into the hardware sort of bucket and sell devices. And
but can you imagine Facebook going to hardware?
No,
it's not going to happen.
No, they're a social network. So what are they selling? Nothing. Their value is their computers on the desk and their brand reputation, isn't it? There's nothing more than that to sell, really, is it?
Mm. So, and the only thing they can do to make money is to annoy their user base. So,
annoy or ignore, did you say?
Annoy.
Yeah, they do that very well.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that Facebook has never made any money out of me. I'm not aware of me actually clicking on
anything?
An ad. I don't think so. Yeah. No.
They get paid just for showing you the ad, though.
Yeah, an impression.
Yeah, yeah.
So, as opposed to a click.
Mm.
But the impression's normally about 10% the value of a click.
Oh, yeah.
So if it costs you 10 cents to display it, it's a dollar to click
it.
That's
they've made a little bit of money out of showing you the ads that you haven't clicked on.
Do you see them, Dr. Ryan?
No, I don't. I completely ignore them.
Do you have ad block or does it...
No. I've just got this blind spot in my brain that when
have you?
If I'm looking
you
at a Facebook page, I just do not see ads.
Oh. Mm. The other alternative is not to go to Facebook.
That is an alternative. It's a valid alternative and it's one that I've thought about a lot. Seriously thought about it. No, Andrew's cut the Facebook umbilical cord. He's no longer on Facebook. Graham's still got a page there, I think. But
I might come back as an alias.
Yeah, I maintain that just so that because there's one thing I don't want to lose. But yeah, I don't go there often. I only go there very occasionally. And I don't feed it. I don't actively use it at all.
Spotify was in the news.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that, the reason why I segue into Spotify is because their authentication system relies on your Facebook account.
So does social.
So does the Microsoft social network relies on the Facebook login.
Oh, I saw it.
Really? That's ridiculous. Whose idea was that?
Microsoft.
Oh,
think, people, think.
I saw a few tweets to about people who were looking to try out the Spotify, isn't it?
Spotify, that's Spotify. It.
That's streaming music and they, to your internet
And they got
device.
To the point of saying, oh, I need a Facebook account. Oh, well, bye-bye, Spotify. Won't even bother trying.
Oh, so you have to have a Facebook account to log in,
yeah.
Do you? Oh, okay. That's why I'm not going to be using Spotify then, I guess.
Yes.
Dr. Ron, have you tried Spotify yet? It launched last week.
It did launch last week.
Yes, last week it did.
Yeah.
Which is streaming music. It's like Pandora, but not Pandora, because we can't get that in Australia.
So it's either paid without ads or it's free with ads.
That's it.
Yeah.
So you can listen to recorded ads at the start of a track, or you can pay a subscription. You can get ad-free music.
They say that their objective is not to compete with radio stations, but I can't see how that be the case. You had a choice of listening to music in the office. You either listen to your local radio station, a CD, or a streamed music service, don't you? So therefore, it is competition.
Yeah, a spokesperson said that they weren't intending to compete with radio stations. They didn't see that they would be taking audience numbers away from radio.
I wonder where they get their advertising data from. Do they look at your Facebook account? I wonder. So Facebook knows that your marital status and where you live, and then they'll slot in ads according to your Facebook conspiracy theory here, I feel.
Warlock in our chat room says you can also log on to social with your live accounts, with your Windows Live. Yeah, we should have mentioned that.
Oh,
Warlock,
yes.
You're correct. You don't, it's not just exclusively Facebook.
I've got a...
Sockle.
Sockle. That's the one.
Mm.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. S-O-C-L.
Sockle.
It's Microsoft's foray into social networking, of which you were laughing quite as we heard in the opening of the show this evening. You didn't believe us. You thought it was April the 1st or something.
Well, it was pretty silly.
It was. All right, we might take a break, and when we come back, there'll be...
Cake?
Cake?
Someone
Who
bring
brought
cake?
Cake?
I don't know. Did someone bring cake?
We should have.
Yeah.
Oh, well, next time.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, and there's a birthday in the studio this evening. Who that person's birthday will remain nameless unless you've been looking at it in the chat. And Lena's task is to guess how old everybody else is in the studio this evening.
I'm never guessing that.
You're the spring chicken.
I am. I am the spring chicken.
Absolutely.
If it's your birthday, you have to bring cake.
Apparently.
Because no one else does.
Yeah.
Mm.
See?
See, there's two schools of thought on this. Do you bring cake when it's your birthday, or do people bring the cake to you when it's your birthday?
No, you bring it when it's yours.
Yeah. You always bring your cake.
Yeah, you share the love.
Mm. Unless you get to a point in your life where you choose not to bring cake.
And you choose to ignore your birthdays.
Yeah, which I think there's a few people in this room which would, you know, fall into that category. Wouldn't there be, Crane?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Far too many birthdays.
Speaking of birthdays... I was reading out in the green room before we came in that the Apple II is 36, I think. Woz was talking about it in one of the blogs I was reading. Can you imagine? I'm feeling old now. The Apple II, it's older than Lena is.
Yep.
Computers have been around that long.
Quite a few things are older than me.
Do you remember records? Vinyl?
Yes.
Do you have any?
I own vinyl, yes.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. That's impressive.
Mm.
Yeah, no. My daughters growing up, they're younger than... You know, and they don't even know what vinyl is. They've never seen a record in their lives.
They barely know what CDs are.
There's a whole generation that's not going to know what is the missing link between a cassette and a pencil. They're not going to know how those two things have a relationship.
Cassette and a pencil.
Yeah, you're right there. Spot on.
They're not going to know what they have to do with each other.
Oh, Okay.
Mm. There's a brain. I don't think even Andrew knows what the relationship is. No.
When the tape comes out of the cassette, what do you do?
How do you tighten it up?
Yeah, the pencil.
I haven't used a cassette for a while. Last time I saw a cassette, someone had wrapped around the power pole at the end of the street.
That's right.
You fling it like those crackers that you at the footy. You know,
the noisemakers.
Yeah, the noisemakers. You swing it around the pencil.
Swing it around above your head.
Yeah. This is great for radio. I mean, flinging my arms everywhere.
Looks like we're trying to lasso a steed.
Gesticulating wildly. Yes. Yeehaw.
Which steed are you trying to lasso, Lena?
Oh dear.
Moving along.
Chrome outpaces Internet Explorer. Graham, you'll probably say this is no surprise. But then again, I found it surprising when you think that Internet Explorer is a ubiquitous browser that gets installed with every operating system that Windows or Microsoft put out.
What sense of the word outpaced?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. Chrome has overtaken IE as the most used desktop browser globally for the first time. Most used. So obviously someone set up a lot of traffic monitoring things, because you know how you can see what browsers are coming to your sites and all that sort of stuff. Well, someone's obviously collected that. The latest figures from StatCounter suggest that Google's competing browser overtook the mainstay between May the 7th and the 13th, before stabilizing to maintain less than a 1% lead over Internet Explorer.
That's really surprising.
The apparent Chrome eclipse was first reported by the Global Nerdy blog. So, there you go.
Lots of Chrome users. You actually do see it a lot out there.
Yeah? It's not just people like us that use, obviously.
I'm always astonished when I see ordinary users have installed Chrome on their machines. It's quite encouraging that they like it.
Okay. Well, so for the record, Microsoft has said, no, say it isn't so. Microsoft previously rejected StatCounter's methodology, complaining in March that the firm counted web pages pre-rendered in Chrome but never actually seen by the user.
Okay.
So, yeah. Have you noticed that the back end of Chrome has changed a little bit? It did an update the other day, and they've moved all of the the under the hood stuff around. Have you had a look there?
Not lately,
have
no.
Have a look. You go, oh, where have they all gone? But no, I noticed that the other day when I was doing some updates and things like that. The new Chrome one snuck in.
You don't have much cause to go to the under the hood stuff usually in Chrome.
No.
Just accept all of the faults and off you go.
Yeah, well, see, I went there to delete all my browser history and all that.
Why?
Sort
what
are we
looking
stuff.
At? We'll edit this bit out. You can tell us.
No.
Cake recipes.
Yes, cake recipes.
And you have to delete it because then otherwise people will expect cake.
I tried, folks, sorry.
Dear. Now, the reason that I went there to delete that is, you know when in Chrome you actually type an address and it tries to pre-fill it in for you?
Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of sites which I didn't want to have pre-filled in there for me from
a
professional point of view.
Oh, I see.
And I decided, well, no, I've had enough of this. I'm going to go and delete them all. So I went in there and deleted all the cache and all the cookies and all that sort of stuff. So I said, well, I've got a fresh browser.
And did it solve the problem?
Yeah, it did.
Cool.
It did. So, because the other thing, too, is...
Because I think in IE, you can delete the history, but it still remembers the things you've previously typed.
I don't use IE.
So that's a difference in behavior then, if doing that actually does clear the previously typed.
Yeah, because if you type in, like, TEC for tech, as soon as you've typed about three letters in, it's already said, oh, you want Tech Talk Radio, and you go TEC, enter. And that's great for a shortcut. But if you actually want to go to a technology site or you're
tech
Googling
crunch
something,
or...
yeah, it just, you have to type the whole thing out.
Mm.
And that was the purpose of me deleting my browser history. I said, no, I've had enough of this. I want to be able to, start afresh. So I did.
It wasn't that you type three characters and something completely unsavory pops up on your screen that you went to last week.
Oh, that happens too, but you get rid of those things, don't you? It's awfully embarrassing, especially when... Yeah. Anyway. After 2 months, the iPad shares top spot, which is probably not surprising because there's a lot of them out there. But usage of Apple's third generation iPad in the United States has passed the original iPad model after just 2 months of availability. So people may be set on the fence.
So hang on, an iPad has beaten an iPad?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good.
It's all beaten right. itself in its record-breaking thing. Well,
and we can't tell because we can't call it anything. It's just the iPad.
Yeah. Yeah,
he said third generation iPad compared to the first generation iPad. Where's the issue there differentiating between the two?
He's talking about iPads and iPads.
Yes.
But I see what you're saying. But yes, you're right, Lena. I did say the third and the original. I still have an original. It's still great. Still plays Angry Birds. Yeah. I don't know what the problem is.
I've still got an original too.
I've dropped
mine.
So
why do we need an iPad 3 that's not a 3 that's an iPad?
Because it's different to the first one.
It's just faster and better.
Is it?
Yeah, well...
But if the old one still plays Angry Birds, what else do you want?
Well, exactly.
It's resolutionary.
Ha! I see what you did there.
Yeah.
It wasn't me. It was Mr. Cook, I think. Will Cook make apple crumble? That was...
He's decided not to take his bonus, his share, his stock reward.
Has he? He was listed in the news as being... was announced... And I cut it out. I cut it out because I didn't think it was relevant.
He's a very rich man.
He is a very rich man. I think he was listed as the third richest CEO in 2011.
Yeah, I think I read something during the course of the week that he had stock options of 74 million. Odd,
yeah.
Yeah, and he turned it down.
Yeah, so he'd have to be pretty rich to knock back 70-odd million dollars.
Man, if I was getting that wage, another couple of mil here, there wouldn't make any difference whatsoever.
You wouldn't be sitting here doing Tech Talk Radio on a Monday night.
You would, but there'd be really, really good cake.
Yeah, it would be good cake.
It'd be really
good
cake.
Mm. Right. They might all have a portal gun each, too.
Yay!
Yeah.
Let's work on getting Andrew really rich.
No, don't. Go to my head. According to recent reports from software analytics firm Localistics, Apple's latest iPad capturing a staggering 14% of the US iPad market in just 4 days. So, and they've sold already 3 million devices. That's a lot of iPads.
Mm. Yes.
That's a lot of iPads. New ones.
iPad 3s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, iPads.
Well,
no.
Third generation
iPads.
iPad brackets, third generation, close brackets.
Yeah. What is?
Yeah. Yeah. At least they're not...
Only we don't normally verbalise brackets.
In fact, Graham, have you done a marketing report on the iPad of recent times? Are they still selling it as a...
No. No, you're talking about the 4G issue.
Yeah, that's the 4G issue.
Yeah, no. They sorted that out a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
they,
Graham talked
about
it.
Yeah, you did talk about it,
didn't you? Yeah, so that in the markets where there isn't a 4G network that it can connect to, they now sell it as the... Instead of Wi-Fi plus 4G model, they sell it as the Wi-Fi plus cellular model, which is much more sensible.
It does make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I say when they do something sensible.
I know. I was impressed.
Yeah.
You were impressed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you watch. Everyone will go 4G and they'll bring it back.
Yeah, well, that's fine. If they bring out a model that can connect to a 4G network here, that's fine.
Hey,
but 4G is still cellular. The cellular still works. And if you call it the iPad plus 4G, it suggests that... Yeah, you've got to then ask the question, but can it still connect to a 3G network?
Well, yes, you do have to ask that question, but it would have created a lot of confusion amongst consumers, and I think that's what a lot of countries had a bit of an issue with, because it was misleading, because it... Yes. Let's not go there, shall we?
Yes, the ACCC have been there and done that.
Dr. Ron, did you know that London Police have now got new mobile fingerprint scanners?
Hello,
how's this for
hello,
modern
hello.
Technology?
They've had these for a long time.
Have they?
Well, years.
Oh, so it's not new. I thought this was quite good when I came across this.
No, next.
Been in the vault? You've been in the vault with press releases.
Was this from IT News, is it?
Yeah.
What do they have to say?
They were just saying that the police in the United Kingdom have been issued with handheld, mobile, phone-size biometric fingerprint scanner, so they can go, boy, you're nicked, come here and do it in the street.
Look, they've been trialling them for years and years, and they had to make legislative changes so that police were allowed to use them. And where they are being used, I believe, is in a situation like they do a traffic stop and the motorist doesn't have a driver license, can't produce one, and the police say, well, we're not satisfied with who you say you are, who you purport to be.
Yeah.
You
may not be who you are. We now require you to undergo a fingerprint scan. They have a little portable device which looks like a breath test unit. It's about that size.
Yeah.
Or the size of a mobile phone, and you stick your finger on it, and then it talks like cellular back to the fingerprint headquarters.
So they're using it more as an identification thing than a tracking sort of
thing. Yeah. It's for identification. Yeah, it's for field identification. That's right.
So
there's no guarantee that we'll identify the person.
No, if
the person
has
got their fingerprints on record, but if they've got their fingerprints on record for whatever reason, whether they've been bad people or whether they've
whether the cops came to their primary school and did it for fun.
That's right.
And
they say they don't do all that sort of stuff. Then you might have a firearms license and you've gone through an application process where you've had to give your fingerprints, then it's useful.
Mm. Torchwood had them years ago.
Torchwood's had them for a long time.
Sci-fi does everything first, you see.
I'm sorry. I'll read my press releases and run them past you all first before we come and talk to them.
That'd be good, Andrew.
I thought that was a snazzy idea. Because,
it's a snazzy idea.
They've just got tasers here.
It's not new.
Yeah, they've got tasers here in Victoria. When are they going to bring out fingerprint scanners? After these, they can be tasered and printed at the same time.
I've just found the article, and I'm just
going Control F to find, and I'm typing in civil liberty. Oh, no.
Nothing?
Nothing there. No. Oh, that's surprising. All right.
Okay. Nothing this is a live on-air Google search, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, no, nothing there from civil libertarians. But no, that obviously the legislation's got through.
No, they've probably all been locked up. Civil libertarians.
They've been fingerprinted.
And locked up.
And locked up. And that's the end
I think the crux of
that's
what
all we have to say
they would have a problem with that people's being fingerprinted and then it's going into the database, not going out of the database.
I'm sure they'd have a problem in both directions.
Yes. You know, it would be... You know, Lena's right. That's an important distinction. It would the fingerprint that's taken on the side of the road is held for as long as it takes to scan the database, and then that wouldn't be actually kept.
So yeah. I'm seeing something like one of those CSI Miami things where they scan it.
Enhance.
It goes off Enhance. Into the goes Enhance. Off into wherever
that's,
and comes
yeah,
back.
Yeah, that's where I first saw them. Yeah, McGee had one on NCIS.
Oh, Tim.
Oh, McGee.
Oh, dear.
Hapless chap.
Let's change the topic, shall we?
Okay.
Let's talk about early days of computing. Dr. Ron, did you hack with a little computer? Did you actually build things? Did you get the soldering iron out? Did you play with COM ports and
devices? I was just eaten
devices?
By a grue.
I was eaten by a grue. That should answer your question.
So that yours was terminal. What about you, Graham?
Of course.
Of course.
Yeah, I had a TRS-80 Coco that had a homebrew disk drive floppy disk controller plugged into the cartridge slot where the games cartridges usually go.
So you got the soldering iron out?
A Coco?
Dr. Ron,
a
do you...
A colour computer.
Yep.
Dr. Ron, do you own a soldering iron?
I do own a soldering
okay,
iron.
Okay, good. That's...
That's a scary thought.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dr. Ron.
Thanks, Graham. You know your friends, aren't you? It sounds like Graham may have seen my soldering.
didn't bring cake, though.
It'll do it.
Anyway, apparently this is a dying art. Amongst
soldering?
Young, yeah, well, soldering and tinkering with computers and playing with things like that. So.
Well, that's one of the reasons I built my DAB Plus receiver.
Yeah?
To just get the soldering iron out and practice my soldering. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I must admit, I've got mine out again. It's a Weller. It sits on the table at home. I make up audio cables.
Yeah, one of the light blue, greeny, bluey coloured ones.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's the one.
But it's a quality of life issue, Andrew. Really, do you spend, you know, half an hour mucking around with soldering irons to do that? Or do you just, you know, spend $1.50 at your...
We had this discussion
computer store
at another spot, and it just so happened that I was passing the shop, so I bought some long cables as well.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you can't sort of buy certain cables. You have to make them up. Especially the custom ones, because they're never the right length or anything like that. But the bottom line is, computing, back when WAS first built the, you know, those early computers, you had to build things. You had to make things.
Yeah.
And that was exciting. Well, there's a company that's actually trying to reinvent that enthusiasm with the young folk of today, who otherwise would adopt Dr. Ron's mentality of going to the shop and buying something.
Sort of like if you buy a kit home and build your own home.
Yeah.
Like a kit computer.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Or a kit car.
And that's the topic of this week's View from the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
The tiny Raspberry Pi is a credit card-sized computer that would fit in the palm of your hand. It's not really designed to replace the PC or Mac sitting on your desk. Instead, it's designed to reintroduce kids to the joys of tinkering with technology. This credit card-sized computer will cost around $40 in Australia, and I'm lucky enough to have one of the first local review units thanks to distributor Element 14. The first few orders sold out pretty quickly, so it could take a while to get your hands on one. Now, this is a computer stripped back to the bare essentials, with a 700MHz ARM processor, 256MB RAM, and a graphics chip with H.264 acceleration. Now, the circuit board's got, again, just the bare essentials for connectors. HDMI and composite video, two USB ports, 10100 Ethernet, 3.5mm audio jack, an SD card slot, a GPIO expansion pins. There's no built-in hard drive or anything fancy like that. You'll need to download Linux to an SD card and run the Raspberry Pi from that. There's no case, there's no power supply, no keyboard, no monitor, no mouse. All you get is a tiny circuit board with a lot of potential. Now, it's powered via micro USB, so you can use the power supply provided with probably your smartphone, your tablet, or maybe even an e-book reader. The Raspberry Pi, like I said, uses an ARM processor designed for low-powered devices. Like the first netbooks, it won't run Windows or Mac OS, so you'll need to use a stripped-down version of Linux, such as Debian Squeeze. Still, even then, it struggles to do more than one thing at a time. I tried high-end versions of Linux, such as Fedora Remix, but it really struggled to run smoothly. The Raspberry Pi just doesn't have enough grunt. If you're expecting a plug-and-play gadget, you'll be disappointed. It takes time to get the Raspberry Pi up and running, and also takes a while to find your way around Linux if you're a newbie. These aren't criticisms of the Raspberry Pi or of Linux, just observations. If you're after a gadget which just works, the Raspberry Pi might not be what you're looking for. But to view the Raspberry Pi as a poor man's computer is to totally miss the point. It's actually designed to reintroduce children to the concept of tinkering with computers and bringing their ideas to life, rather than simply sitting back to play with the latest wonder gadgets. The Raspberry Pi is perhaps best thought of as a pile of Lego bricks waiting to be turned into something amazing. The Raspberry Pi Foundation was established by teachers from the University of Cambridge who were frustrated that new computer science students were no longer experienced hobbyist programmers who'd grown up tinkering with computers and electronics. They wanted to make it easier for children to get their hands dirty with this kind of stuff, and thus they came up with the idea of the Raspberry Pi. Still, it remains to be seen whether the Raspberry Pi will be embraced by educators and students, or whether it simply becomes another plaything for the digital elite, as netbooks did. Now, while the Raspberry Pi can run Linux to mimic the look of Windows, it's perhaps better suited to performing a specific job rather than being an all-purpose desktop workstation. Students might find it's a handy computer for learning to program, tinkering with electronics, perhaps even building robotics projects. Other tech-savvy tinkerers might find a good place for it at the heart of a lounge room media center, a home server, or a car entertainment system. What the Raspberry Pi lacks in features, it makes up for in potential. It's designed for people young and old who want to build things rather than simply buy things.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there's a good reason to get the soldering iron out, have a play, build your own stuff.
Yeah, I didn't realise that was where you were going with that intro, but yeah, that's...
I'm not allowed to steal his thunder anymore.
No, good idea too.
No. Now, you were saying you're on a waiting list for these little gadgets.
Yeah, I want to get some, but there's two suppliers that are selling them. I'm on waiting list with both of them, and yeah, haven't even got an email yet inviting me to place an order, so I'm obviously so far down the list. I believe there's only a few dozen in the country at the moment.
Well, Addo's got one. He's lucky.
Yeah, I know.
Wonder if he has to give it back.
Bloody Addo. I want one. I want my Raspberry Pi.
It'd make a good media server, you reckon?
I reckon that's one job it'd do really well, because it's got USB ports for attaching storage. It's got a network port to connect to your network so it can suck stuff off your NAS or whatever, and it's got an HDMI port to connect to your TV. I reckon it'd be ideal for that sort of thing.
There's a photo and a link on our front page of our website. If you go to techtalkradio.com.au right now, scroll down on the left-hand side, you'll see a printed circuit board, and that's it. They're very small devices.
But I reckon it'd be a great little drop anywhere, like you can drop a little web server somewhere or with some content on it or, you know, a little, you know.
Yeah.
Be good for just little servers for doing things.
Yeah.
As Adam says, I doubt it's going to run X Windows all that terribly well and multitask.
But that's not what it's for.
No, it's not. No. No, I think it's got huge amounts of potential.
Yeah.
Doesn't even come with a case. It just comes as a circuit board bare.
It was like what we used to buy things. Yeah. You used to buy like a card for a computer or something like that, and you'd have to wire it up or loom it up or whatever it was like that. So,
yeah, I reckon it'll be absolutely zero time before someone comes out with a nice case to put it in that attaches to the Visa mounts on the back of your LCD screens.
Yes. It's interesting. During Addo's report there, I think Warlock in our chat was saying how he electrocuted himself by connecting his mum's Mixmaster up to something with bare wires. Just goes to show what our listeners get up to. During the course of the week, I decided to repair my UPS, which is my uninterruptible power supply. Now, you know how those things have batteries in them to actually store a bit of energy.
Yeah,
so when you lose your electricity to your house, which is quite common these days, your computer
can keep sending power to your computer. Yeah, yeah. So it's got a little 12-volt battery in it, like a little bit like a motorcycle battery.
Yeah, exactly. Like the ones you have in alarms, you know, your home alarm?
They're the ones,
those big black things. So I've got two of them in mine.
Well, you've got a big one.
Well, it's a 1,000, 1-amp hour type sort of thing. So it can power a computer maybe for about, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, all things going well. It's really designed to smooth out the brownouts that you get, you know, the ones where you click and it goes off for 30 seconds or 2 seconds or something and then comes back up again.
And, of course, the batteries in those are the weak link because they're lead acid chemistry batteries, so they die after a couple of years of abuse in one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And they last, you know, 5 years and you've got to change them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, UPS is worth good bucks. So, anyway.
So, quite often the electronics are still good, but the battery is dead. Yeah. So, you can get in and change the battery.
Correct. So,
but you've got to be careful because you can
bite.
You can unplug it from the power and there can still be mains power in there.
Yeah.
Even when it's not connected to the mains anymore.
Yeah.
Because the batteries are generating the mains power.
That's the whole point of what it does, yeah. So you've got to be very careful when you're working on them.
Yeah, anyway, I managed...
if you don't know exactly what you're doing, don't ever open one, guys, please.
No.
That goes for you too, Andrew.
Well, I opened it, I've changed the batteries and I only got one zap, but it wasn't me being zapped, it was just the arc when I connected the battery back up again.
Oh,
it It wanted to suck a great deal of power out of these great new batteries. I put in there.
Yeah.
Because what I did, I actually, I took it apart a week beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
If not even longer than that beforehand and just let it sit there.
In the hope
disconnect
that
so all the electricity would go away. Then I took off the batteries and then changed the batteries, put it back in.
Go away, little electrons.
Yeah.
Go away. Yes.
Yeah, electrons are good when they're not ferocious. But when they get a bit ferocious, they can do nasty things if you're not careful, especially when you lean on the wrong things. So, yeah, there's still life out there in people doing technological things at home, I think.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's change the subject completely, shall we?
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
First, I'm going to talk about being plentiful, and then I'm going to talk about not being plentiful. Spoilers.
Spoilers?
Diablo 3, you'll hear more about it next week. I'm going to do an in-depth talk about it next week.
Can you put us all out of our misery?
How much have you played it?
I haven't yet.
Oh!
I don't believe it.
I know.
You're a games writer and you haven't played it.
All the teasing that you've done over the last couple of weeks.
I know. It's killing me. But I've had more work to do.
Is that box still sitting on your table at home, sitting there proud of place?
It's installed. It's all ready to go. It's installed at least
now.
Because
when we were over there more than a week ago, ta-da, it was presented to us on a platter.
Yep. My collector's edition.
Run it yet.
I still haven't run it yet. Oh, no. But I'm going
Unbelievable.
To. And next week I'll tell you all about my experiences in it.
We're not angry. We're just disappointed.
No, so am I.
We're not disappointed. We're
shocked. I hate myself.
You should.
Diablo 3 has sold 3.1 million copies in 24 hours.
3.1 million?
3.5 million copies in 24 hours.
Wow. That's up there with the iPad.
Mm, with more than 6.3 million copies landing in gamers' hands during its first week.
Dr. Ron, have you got yours yet? Or are you waiting for the review?
I'm waiting for a review like everybody else on the panel here.
Sorry.
But no pressure or anything.
Sales of this magnitude make the title the fastest selling PC game in history, according to Blizzard's figures. Well, Blizzard would want to say that, so maybe take that with a grain of salt. Diablo 3's first day sales do not include the 1.2 million players who received Diablo 3 as part of the World of Warcraft annual pass promotion. So there's another 1.2 million there if you want to count the total amount of people who are playing it, which is seriously impressive. Having said that, we have been waiting over a decade for this game, me a decade and 2 weeks.
so another couple of weeks isn't going to hurt you.
No, exactly. So I can see why so many people have rushed out to grab it. Minecraft has sold 9.2 million copies.
Yay!
Which is very exciting. Mojang estimates total sales of open world creation game hit 9.2 million across PC, Xbox, iOS and Android versions. Now the Xbox 360 edition sold 400,000 copies during its first day, recouping development costs in 60 minutes.
That's crazy. That's totally cray.
That is cray.
Hey,
that's what you call a good return on your investment, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I'll make it back for you in the first hour of sale. Yep.
Really?
Yeah, right.
Have you seen the little ocelots yet?
Yes.
I haven't.
The big cats.
Yeah, I haven't.
They're great.
They're like lolcats.
Yeah, they're exactly like lolcats.
After that, 400,000.
That would make them lolocelots.
Lolocelots. Oh, I love it.
Lolocelots.
After that,
you said it.
That was great. Yeah, that was great. After the 400,000 copies in 60 minutes, they went on to sell 1 million copies in 5 days, on its way to becoming the fastest selling Xbox Live title in history. So this is a downloadable title in the Xbox Live Arcade. During the week of May 14th, Minecraft Xbox 360 Edition tallied more unique users than Activision's shooter Juggernaut, Call of Duty Black Ops on Xbox Live. So it's big. Bigger than big. Big. Not so big. Game Australia is gone. Now, I talked last time about them going into administration, but it's become a little bit more official now with
281 staff losing their jobs and 60 stores closed. So our
was that the going stage last week?
Yeah, that was it. They went into voluntary administration earlier this month, but today, a few days ago, PricewaterhouseCoopers, who are the accountancy firm looking after it, confirmed that 264 game store employees and 17 members of staff at the head office have been officially dismissed.
Ooh.
They're not saying that game is completely gone. There have been a number of expressions of interest shown, but that deadline has closed. PwC's Megan Senior said over 30 expressions of interest were made, which is it's promising, adding that they'll now need to be assessed and that the process will take some time. But during that time, they have to close the stores and let the people go, because obviously they can't keep trading.
Can't keep trading, no. Mm.
That's a real shame.
It is. So our hearts go out to all those people who have recently lost their jobs in from Game Australia. The employees will have their entitlements paid via a government scheme that's overseen by the Department of Education, Employment and Workplace Relations, which is good. At least they won't be left with nothing. Now, this leaves us in Australia with EB and JB being our main games retailers.
EB's everywhere.
Yeah. So is JB, though.
Really? I thought EB would have been more prolific than JB.
No.
Okay.
JB's everywhere.
Yeah, JB's everywhere. Okay. And JB have an added advantage now. They've just announced that they'll flex their competitive muscle against EB by offering cheaper imported games that they've bought wholesale overseas.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
How does that work?
So a lot of people are...
they're cutting someone's lunch here in Australia and not using the local distributor.
They are.
So this is a great import that they're selling then?
Pretty much.
Ooh.
So that's something that they figure can help them get that competitive edge over EB, but we'll see how that goes. A few industry bodies aren't really happy about it, saying that it does cut lunch and you are paying more and that money is going to someone who has a job and, you know, whatnot. So whenever you're paying less, people are getting less money for, you know, the work they're doing. So, but by the same token, games are really expensive here.
On the other hand,
and they shouldn't
global market and the end of protectionism and all the rest of it.
Exactly. Another closure is 38 studios and their subsidiary. What should I say? Subsidiary.
Subsidiary.
Is 38 studios the name of a company, or is that the number of studios that are closing?
38 studios is the name of the company,
okay,
and their
good.
subsidiary. I'm still on the fence about that one.
The subs diary
is Big Huge Games. They've laid off their entire staff. All employees at the Providence, Rhode Island-based and Maryland-based development studios have been let go. The company's only put out one game in its lifetime, and that was out in February. That was the role-playing game Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. They had 379 employees full-time as of March, and according to a report last week, they'd not been paid since the 1st of May and have lost all their healthcare benefits. That's something we don't think about in Australia very much, because our healthcare benefits are not generally attached to our jobs. So that's a really troubling thing, that when there's a mass amount of layoffs in the United States, people lose their healthcare benefits, which is very scary.
They voted for it, or didn't in this case.
Well,
that's another story.
Yeah, it's something to definitely keep in mind, that this is very scary times. The troubles at 38 Studios came to light earlier this month when reports from the Rhode Island government indicated that the company had failed to make a $1.125 million loan payment to the state's Economic Development Corporation. I don't think the single payment was that big. I think that was the loan, and they failed to make a payment on that loan. Now, that's annoying a lot of people in terms of how these people are possibly being not looked after. If 38 Studios decided to sell the intellectual property of the Kingdoms of Amalur, they could be expected to make $20 million for it, one industry analyst has said. So they could wipe that loan clean and they could look after everyone if they just sold the intellectual property to this game, but I don't think they want to. So it's sort of a bit of a standoff in that way.
Mm.
I say sell the IP, you're not going to use it. And
exactly.
Look after everyone, because they made that game. They made that IP, so
share the love.
Yeah. But that's all I've got this week.
Okay. Do you know about Gamefly?
No. What is Gamefly?
Gamefly announced on Wednesday that it plans to publish mobile games for Apple's iOS platform and Google's Android operating system together. In addition, the video game rental service plans to further expand into mobile by launching its own Android app store to take on Google Play.
A rental games rental service, did you say?
Interesting. Anyway, so there you go. Bit of extra gossip I saw today. Gamesfly. Keep a lookout for that.
Cool.
And you'll have to check your Android thing to say you can download stuff from non-approved Android or the Android store. One of those security issues. I just thought I'd add that to it as well.
Yeah, no, I've never heard of it, actually. Surprised.
Oh, okay.
Can I have a look at that press release, please?
Yeah, you certainly can.
Thank you very much.
Hand it over during the course of the day. So, all right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Come and join us in the chat. chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you're listening to us as we go to air. If you're not, you'll have to join us on other forums, such as the forum or via email. During the course of last week, we announced that we had a television program up and running, otherwise known as a pilot. We've had truckloads, literally truckloads of feedback, which is good.
It's been great.
The ratio of people that have watched it to the people have sent us has been a little disappointing. It's about 25%. So a lot of people have watched it and haven't sent us feedback. And you know who you are. You do. I'm pointing at you right now.
You're pointing at me.
Am I? Sorry, I'll point it a bit.
Point at the camera.
Okay.
There.
Okay. So you know who you are. We need the feedback because it's important to us.
There's a camera in here.
There is up there behind Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah.
And only if you know the right address can you see it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they're looking now.
I should have dressed up.
You should have. So anyway, your ears have pricked up and you've gone, what? There's a television pilot? Yeah, there's a pilot. You can go and have a look if you visit techtalkradio.com.au/TV. What's the password, Lena?
Switch.
Correct. Go and have a look at it. But please send us an email. We want to know what your thoughts are, good, bad, or indifferent. We're not reading any of our stuff out. There's just way too many to get there. But majority of the feedback we've taken on board, which is really good, and we know who you are.
No, we don't.
It's all good. It's all good. So
all good.
We do really want to hear what you've got to say, though. We don't just want we love it sort of comments.
Yeah, and last week we said after the show the address. We'll tell you again at the end of the address if we remember where to go and have a look. So, but simple, techtalkradio.com.au/TV.
And we are
no tweeting.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah, please don't put it on the social networks or Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. We want to just keep it
just for us. Your people,
the loyal listeners, the people who actually listen to the show. So
yeah. So you can go and do that. So yeah, please don't post it anywhere else. Now, remember how Mr. Conroy has decided to launch an investigation into price gouging for IT?
Yes.
I think we spoke about it last week, if not the week before. Wasn't
I think Ed Husic did, and then Stephen Conroy took over. Yes.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
He was making noise about it before Conroy was.
Oh, okay. Well, they've gone a bit, they're getting a bit tough here. They're going to go and name and shame people. Those companies that are actually gouging us, they're going to name them.
Good.
I think so too. Because I'm still at a loss to work out why tech, whether it be a download where there's no middleman, why it differs in price so much between Australia and America, for example.
Yes.
Hello, Adobe in particular.
So you're naming already.
I am naming.
And shaming.
Naming.
There's got to be a middleman here in Australia. I think there are Adobe Asia Pacific that need to get their 30% cut of all their software. So they just put it up for us. So, but anyway, I'm assuming things and it's my opinion and none shall pass. But anyway, the inquiry, which is a result of a year-long campaign by Labor backbencher Ed Husic, as Lena was just telling us, has been asked by the Communications Minister, Stephen Conroy, to investigate whether a price difference exists between IT hardware and software bought in Australia versus those in the US, UK and Asia Pacific, which, as we've just discussed, yes, there is. So, name and shame. What a good idea. What's the going rate for a iTunes song these days? I've never bought on
depends.
iTunes. Yeah,
depends on the and how does quality.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a...
They charge based on your sample, your data rate, do they?
No, I'm not...
Well, they charge a bit more for the high-quality DRM-free ones, put it that way.
Oh, do they?
No, there's not been DRM for a long time.
Is this on iTunes?
Yeah. Not for a long, long time. I think it's is it ACCC? Or AAC?
Yeah.
Yeah, that format or other formats, I think, is the main difference between the prices. Okay. But I could be wrong there.
I thought it was just different bit rates of their AAC.
Could very well be. I've never really cared enough. I just go, I want that song. I will buy that song.
So you're part of the problem.
Not really. I don't care how much
I'm paying.
Don't
care about quality? No.
I care about quality. Nah. I don't care about the price.
Oh, right.
That's totally different. Totally different. I'm looking it up now, but it's the internet here is very slow. On average, about $2.19.
Yeah.
The occasional $1.19 thing.
Yeah.
I've seen the occasional $2.99 as well.
So it's about a buck difference. Is that what you're sort of saying between Australia and New Zealand? Australia and America? in our downloads?
Yeah, probably 80 cents, 90 cents, something like that.
With the dollar at parity?
Yeah, well, it's a bit under at the moment. I think we're heading a bit north again, but, you know, plus or minus a bit.
Bit over, a bit under, yeah.
It's all parity.
It's not that much different.
No, no. Google Transparency. They put out reports every so often, and this is in particular to YouTube and their takedown requests. You know, when someone infringes copyright and they get, no, take it down.
Cease and desist.
Yeah, well, in the latest transparency report, Google has included information about takedown requests related to copyright infringements for the first time ever. They've never normally done this. According to data from this year, nearly 8,000 copyright owners have contacted Google with requests to remove search results that led to copyright infringing websites.
Like Rick Astley videos.
Well, yeah, potentially.
On YouTube.
Or more significantly, that the bit that's been reported on is to pirated Microsoft software.
Correct. And Microsoft led the charge with more than 500,000 removal requests across 9,108 domains during the past month alone.
That's great.
Yep. A total of 2.5 million takedown requests across 23,485 domains over the past year.
So if you go to google.com/transparency report.
Oh, it's there, is it?
It's got all of the information there.
Oh, excellent. So you have a bit of a read.
Yeah, you can click on links there and you'll see graphs and maps and infographics and things of, you know, the URLs that... The number that have been requested to have been removed and targeted domains, the number of copyright holders that have complained, and like Andrew said, I don't think they've done this before, but it's all available now.
Yeah, online. No, they haven't done it. That's why it's all new. So you can go and see how many people are actually flagrantly out there flogging stuff that they shouldn't be.
Top targeted domains in the past month. There you are. I'm not going to read them out. There's a list of problem domains there that Google's been asked to remove, to take down.
Mm.
And well, as Graham said, top copyright owners, Microsoft, and then followed by NBC Universal. BPI, British recording people, and others. Yeah.
Mm. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have some more. I've got some Apple stuff here we'll talk about after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do?
Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, some other interesting news while we're talking about gaming. Did you hear what happened with Telstra during the course of the week?
No.
Tell us.
Well, they have a game portal, and it's called Game Arena.
Oh, that's right, yes. My friend's the editor of that.
Yeah, Telstra has been...
It was a very busy day for him.
Yes, Telstra have been forced to reset 230,000 passwords after its gaming website, Game Arena, was hacked.
Mm.
That's a lot of passwords to reset. I hope they'd had to do it manually. Anyway, up to 35,000 usernames, email addresses, and encrypted passwords for the site were thought to be compromised. But Telstra said it was resetting the majority of their passwords as a bit of a precaution. So if you weren't one of those 35,000, bad luck. What's that? That's the extra 200,000 on top of that had their game thing.
Hope you've recovered, Joby.
Financial credit card data was not stored on the third-party hosted site, so all good. Just username and password for those who want to play games on Telstra.
Are they gaming servers, Lena, that Telstra's hosting?
Yes. Is that and what that is? The Game Arena forums as well, I think, and just your general account, your Game Arena account, I think.
Okay.
But, yeah.
In particular, though, you probably want to be careful if you use the same password on that as you use on other things.
Mm.
Go and don't use that password anywhere anymore.
Yeah, change them. Do it regularly. I do. And I forget.
That's why I don't.
then you click that button on a website saying, forgot your password, and it sends you a link to reset it. So, anyway.
Mm.
In other gaming stuff, the Sony Xperia Play. Have you got one of those? Says he looking at Lena. No?
No.
What is it? It's like a little gaming console-y thing. It's probably more appropriate for other markets than ours. But anyway, Gingerbread is the operating system of choice of that, and that's an earlier version of Linux, and Sony can't upgrade.
Hey, you mean... Android,
I beg your pardon. Yes,
My head just exploded then at the thought of that. I'm like, what?
What?
So this gaming, something really
never
wrong.
Been seen in the same photo together.
Yeah.
What?
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry. Confused everybody. Shall Linux, I start this one again?
Never been in the Android, one room at the same time.
No.
Kind of related.
Yeah. But anyway. Anyway, distant so cousins. The Sony is confirming that the Xperia Play will remain on Gingerbread due to gaming issues. I don't know what those gaming issues are. I suspect it'll be graphic related and can't do it because I know that the more up the chain, the food chain you go with some of these new operating systems, the more hungry it becomes for other resources. So
could be
you lose your gaming experience.
A method of avoiding fragmentation too, to try and get developers to develop for just one thing. If they say we're sticking with this OS, then that's what the developers have to work for. And it's not as hard to keep up with every new iteration.
Ah, I see.
That could be a method of doing that. Because developing for Android is really hard because there's so many different Androids, both hardware and software and all that kind of stuff.
Well, see, the other thing too, Android is sort of like evolving at breakneck speed. Mm. It's a new version comes out, you know, a point version comes out quite frequently. So, and I don't know, they obviously tweak things because that's what they do. That's why they bring out new versions of it. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Very, very hard to develop for.
I can imagine. Apple, speaking of, I mentioned before the break, we're going
to
talk about
very easy to develop for.
Is it? I've never developed for Apple. Have you?
God, there goes the fangirl again.
No, it's a fact. And you have to agree with it. If you don't agree with it, then you're a fanboy of the other side. That there is way easier to develop for an iPad, an iPhone, and one operating system than it is for all of the different Android things that are out on the market at the moment.
I'm being told off, ladies and gentlemen.
No, you're not.
Yes,
not until you answer.
Being submissive here.
I've never developed for Apple or anything else, so...
But if you develop for three products compared to 350 products, which one do you think would be easier for you to do? Which one would you prefer to do? Three products, of course. You're being a fanboy now.
Ooh!
Yep, you're being a fanboy
now. Inverse fanboy.
Yeah, invoice fanboy.
An invoice fanboy.
Invoice fanboy. Yep. Of course it's going to be easier to develop for three products than 350 products.
She's going off, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, it's common sense. This is not crazy. You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
No, we're not.
Ah, is that the way you always look?
Yes.
That's unfortunate.
Bad luck. Take the glasses off.
No.
Now, what was I going to say? I was going to say this thing about Apple.
I tracked it absolutely completely.
I was going to say this thing about Apple, and she's gone off on a tangent calling you a fanboy.
Sony Xperia. So easy to
say. No, we've moved on from that,
too.
Oh,
okay.
Catch up, Dr. Roy.
Have we started again?
Yeah, yeah. Apple owns 74% of smartphone web traffic and 95% of tablet traffic. So all those people that have non-Apple tablets,
aren't using
you're
them.
In the minority or you're not using them online, one of the two. So how's your Kogan going, by the way, Dr.
Yeah,
Roy?
It's really good. It's great. That's one of the reasons people are not using them.
There was a new Kogan tablet advertised today, I think.
Really?
Dr. Ron's personal advice would be to avoid it at all costs.
Oh, okay.
You went there and you've learned, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason why it's so cheap.
Yeah? Yeah, no, traditionally there is in all things, not just tech.
That's it.
In fences, in houses, and all sorts of things. Yeah. According to a new report from online advertising network Chitikar, smartphones are tablets now account for 20% of all web traffic in the United States and Canada. So they're certainly making an inflow. And I must admit, if you go to Google Analytics these days too and check out the stats on your website, they break it down into mobile accessed data and desktop accessed or, you know, fixed line access. Mm. And it's quite interesting to see the proportion of where you're getting a lot of users from.
Mm.
So
yes.
Yes, he says cynically.
And what browser they're running and all
that sort of stuff. Mm. So anyway, traditional PCs accounted for 80% of web traffic with smartphone traffic now up to 14.6%. I wonder if this is indicative of what's happening in Australia too, because we're a very mobile country, aren't we? We all access the web mobility-wise. Graham, you're a big user of mobile web, aren't you? You've got your little dongle that sits in your laptop, but you also use your phone too.
Well, you see, my laptop with its mobile broadband that's built in. It's not a dongle. It's built in.
It's built in.
But
is
that would count as a mobile device? It just looks like Windows as far as the web server.
Okay, of course.
Mobile. My phone, when I use the web on it, that's a mobile device. And my tablet, my ThinkPad tablet, would look like a mobile device.
Okay.
And I do notice that there are still a lot of web developers out there that haven't quite got the hang of developing their mobile websites in a sensible way.
In what respect? They just don't format correctly, or
yeah, they assume that everyone who's coming from an Android device is on a tiny little phone screen, and they won't give you the full size website if you're on a tablet.
They don't give you that option.
The friendly thing to do is to provide a link somewhere that says view full website or something like that.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but some of them still don't do that.
Because it's very easy to detect what type of device is coming into a web server and then route it accordingly.
On a tablet with a tiny little strip down the middle of the screen that's designed for viewing on a phone screen, and the whole side of the thing will just...
Yeah. It's like going to Wikipedia. Wikipedia is designed for any size screen.
It's
good like that. But not all websites like that. Everyone likes being 1,000 pixels wide and fixed to a dimension. So when you go there on a device... You've either got to zoom in and pinch and squeeze and navigate your way around.
Sometimes
is that what you find frustrating?
Sometimes it's very frustrating, yes.
All right, so yes, that's a bit of the latest trends from the United States in respect to how Apple are really getting it. 14.6% smartphones, just under 80% desktops, and 5.6% tablets. I would have thought tablets might have been a little bit higher, but maybe people are using tablets for other
things. All the gazillion iPads that you were saying they sold before, then, people, I don't know what people are doing with them.
But there's 100...
Just playing Angry Birds on it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I do with mine.
Yeah.
There's 100 billion gazillion mobile phones, though, so that's why the percentage is weighted that way.
Yeah. Just because we're rapidly running out of time, let's pick some of the best ones here. Privacy reforms to impose $1.1 million fines for repeat breaches. This sounds pretty good. This is in Australia. Man? If the Australian government and Australian organisations that lose sensitive customer data through hacking or privacy gaps could be fined up to $1.1 million under proposed reforms to the Privacy Act. Listen up, Sony, amongst others. So if you get hacked. See, like Telstra could have been hacked, and if they've got privacy information, they could have been fined for their games hack. I believe that's what that's all about. The Federal Privacy Commissioner can currently push for agreed determinations, but lacks of power to enforce penalties on offending organisations, which is a bit like the ACCC. They're all a bit toothless tigers, aren't they?
The actual result of that won't be what we'd hope, though. The actual result of that is that companies like Sony and everybody else will decide to host that data
elsewhere.
Offshore. Yeah. So it'll just result in lower speeds for Australians and lesser service.
Yeah. Well, under the proposed legislation, small-scale offenders could be taken to court and fined up to $22,000, like for individuals, and $110,000 for organisations. So repeat and serious offenders face financial penalties of $220,000 up to $1.1 million for big... So you got to... They're trying to encourage people, obviously, lock their servers down and try and make them unhackable, which is a good thing. We need...
Well, it would be a good thing if that was going to be the effect, but in fact, that's not going to be the effect. The effect is going to be they're going to move them offshore.
Edibear in our chat room asks, does the government get fined if they get hacked?
No.
They got hacked. Remember when the OFLC got hacked?
Yeah.
They've changed their name and moved on from that. It used to be OFLC.gov.au. Now they're, I think, called censorship.gov.au.
Oh, okay.
But they got hacked. Remember their front page was someone put text over there.
But the government can't prosecute itself.
Well, can't they?
Well.
They can, but it's just like slapping themselves in the hand. Doesn't quite work, does it?
No,
they're not gonna.
Not gonna.
I don't know. I reckon they might. I reckon they might.
And finally today.
There's lots of departments in the government, and if there was a particular department that was conspicuously lax with its security, then you might find that the authorities did prosecute them.
I could believe that there would be prosecutions between levels of government.
Yeah.
Like a Labor federal government would prosecute a Liberal state government.
Oh, they do that every day, though.
Lena is still beating me up in the chat.
I am.
Can't believe it.
I am. Look at this picture.
Wait till the car park afterwards. Someone sent an email saying they want another car park edition.
Really?
Can you believe that?
Should we do another one?
I don't know. Maybe. Watch this space, huh? I
can't believe people listen to that rubbish.
No, it was a film show, wasn't it? But that's another thing. Comcast in the United States plans to charge customers for exceeding their bandwidth cap. Now, Lid was bemoaning this organisation on Twitter the other day. I said, what have they done to you? Apparently, they're a bit flaky.
Why is this news?
Well, this is news because over in the United States, they always had unlimited. You could just go for gold on the bandwidth.
Oh, yes, of course.
On the thing. But now they've realised that there's probably... Bandwidth isn't quite such an infinite possibility as it used to be now with big video streams and things like that.
So as the rest of the world moves from having capped plans to having unlimited plans, America's going the other way.
The cable operator currently suspends customer service if they repeatedly go over their 250 gig monthly allowance rather than charging penalties. Instead of capping broadband customers at 250 gig a month, however, they're going to actually lift their cap to 300 gig and charge $10 for each 50 gig block.
Oh,
only $10.
Unbelievable.
The Telstra charged $10 for each kilobyte or something, don't they?
Comcast.
How dare they?
Crazy kidders.
Oh, unbelievable. Anyway, I was. What else was I going to talk about tonight, too? Steve Ballmer was going to.
Yeah, who's he?
He's Windows 8.
That's right,
man.
He's a Microsoft guy.
Yeah, because that's. I know, put your hands over your headphones and block your ears, Lena. But the RC version is.
Of Windows 8, yeah. RC meaning release candidate.
Yeah, it's not.
Oh, not refuse classification.
Oh, dear.
No. Oh, no, Conroy will be onto it.
There was an adults only version of Windows 8.
You won't be able to download the release candidate because Stephen Conroy doesn't understand.
To clean the pool.
Come to clean the pool.
Yeah. Oh, no.
That's what I'm talking about.
Going off. You're right.
That's too fun.
Well, I'm good. I'm glad you're having fun over there. Anyway, what was I going to say? You've distracted me beautifully, and I've got something else happening over here, which is...
Refuse classification version of...
No.
Windows 8.
Look, you read it. It'll stop you distracting me.
Microsoft Chief Executive Steve Ballmer had laid out goals to see take-up of the software giant's forthcoming operating system, Windows 8, double that of its predecessor, labelling Windows 8 as a dawning of the rebirth of MS Windows.
Haven't they all been?
Mr. Ballmer told the Seoul Digital Forum, Seoul as in what that is in Korea, this week that up to 500 million users would have the operating system by the end of 2013. An official release for Windows 8 is expected in October, meaning Ballmer's prediction would roughly double the speed of Windows 7 Globe. I don't quite understand what that sentence means.
No.
This is from IT News. It took Microsoft until January this year, 26 months after Windows 7's October 2009 release, to reach the same milestone for the previous operating system. Windows 8 take-up. Well, release candidates. We'll have to wait and see.
It'd be interesting to see.
I'm keen to load it up. Lena's loaded it up and regrets every minute of it.
Yeah, but you do that when you get pre-release versions. This I reckon, will be Microsoft's last hurrah, too. Don't you think?
And they'll bring out a number of pre-release versions too. There won't just be the one release candidate. There'll be RC.
Typically, the release candidate's the release candidate.
Is it?
Yeah.
You don't have a couple of them?
No, they've only ever had one, and it'll be in the shops, the real version, by Christmas. You watch.
The release Windows 8?
Yeah.
All right. We'll have to just wait and see.
Anyway, we should move on. Oddspot Gadget App, website of the week, and what else do we do with this thing? Oh, we'll plug the TV show again after this, shall we?
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the National Broadband Network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
The name Harman Kardon has long been synonymous with quality audio products. Now the Harman Kardon Sound Sticks are a component speaker system compatible with all devices with a stereo mini jack output.
All devices?
All devices. All of them. The cabinets are actually made of glass, and Harman Kardon says they offer realistic, room-filling sound and outstanding bass performance. T3 magazine says they resemble a musical jellyfish with a transparent...
What?
They look like a jellyfish made of glass.
I thought they were a stick.
Are they flexible like a jellyfish? Are they wobbly?
No, they're not. They just look like one. With a transparent 20-watt sub and 10-watt satellite speaker system incorporating a touch-sensitive volume button being the only visible control. T3 says the bass is taut and agile while the top end is crisp but never harsh and gives the sound sticks 4 stars. You can buy them online for about £140, which is about $220 Australian dollars. That's our gadget, Andrew. Harman Kardon's sound sticks.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This week's website, followfriday.com. Have you ever been Follow Friday'd?
Yes.
Have you ever Follow Friday'd somebody?
I have, many times.
all you do is type your Twitter account into this website, followfriday.com, and click search. You'll get a heap of interesting data.
But what if it isn't Friday?
It doesn't matter. That's the beauty of this website.
That's a good question.
That's how good it is.
It's quiet during the rest of the week.
But Follow Friday when it's not a Friday?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
No. This is real. This is good. It'll tell you the number of followers you've got, how many people you're following, the number of new followers you've picked up from the #FollowFriday hashtag, as well as graphs which show the number of FFs over the last 9 months or so. You can track your Follow Friday activity. I think it's a bit of fun. The other thing these guys do is they automatically tweet who is the most popular Follow Friday person. Like, if you're in the top 1,000 or something.
Which will only serve to make them more popular.
I
was ranked 124th last week.
You were the 124th most Follow Friday.
In my area.
Who was the most?
I don't know.
Oh.
That's awesome.
Wasn't me.
Wasn't you, Graham. Graham tweets occasionally. When Graham tweets, everyone retweets him and listens because he doesn't tweet all that often.
How many have you done now? 10?
No, a bit more than that.
Have you?
You should follow Friday yourself. But that's our website, Andrew. FollowFriday.com.
That won't work. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
This application has been contributed to the program by our executive producer, Andrew McComb, tonight. An app that removes faces from Facebook, Andrew. Something that's near and dear to your heart.
I just removed Facebook.
A facial recognition application built on Australian design technology proposes to warn users when their photos appear on social networks, allowing them to track down unauthorized or unwanted photos from the sites. The app is called CQ, C-E-E-Q. The CQ Facebook app was designed to help users find photos that appear on Facebook. Though most networks allow some form of tagging of people in photos, the app would warn users about photos they feature in regardless of them being tagged, so it uses facial recognition technology. Interesting. So this article was on IT News. Users can download a free copy of the application by registering on a website. We'll put the details there in the show notes. But that's our application.
Got to go play with that. That sounds
like
a lot of fun.
Is this something that concerns you, Andrew? Are you worried that your face is on Facebook without you having a Facebook account?
I don't know. Does it worry me? Because I can't be tagged, can I? You Facebook users who
know
these things?
I can still tag you and type your name in, even though it doesn't link to an account.
Okay, so what does that mean?
People can search for your name and they can see you and see your face.
No, that doesn't bother me that much.
Lena, you're a big Facebook user?
A little bit. Not as much as Twitter, but yeah.
Does this worry you?
A little bit.
Is this sort of thing a concern?
Yeah, it kind of creeps me out.
Depends on the context it's used, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's mostly harmless, it's fine.
If you take the faces out of Facebook, you're just left with a book, and that would be a good thing.
I love books.
Yeah, me too.
Just the book. The book. Well, that's application.
Oh, good. Can I push the next button?
Please, CQ is the application of the week.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
When Photoshop goes horribly wrong.
When does it do that?
For the second year in a row, the unofficial Worst Photoshop Ever Award.
Oh, really?
It's gone to China.
Oh, well, what happened?
After news that the Chinese government was once again guilty of the worst photoshopping in the world of an official photo. The story went viral last week after Time magazine published a photo and story showing Chinese officials walking
in... What have I got to Google? I want to see this.
Walking in midair. The US magazine reported that while the old cut-and-paste techniques work well in kindergarten classrooms and paper mache projects, officials from the Chinese government discovered it didn't transfer so smoothly to Photoshop.
That is fantastic, that photo.
Oh, there it is. If you Google it, the Sydney Morning Herald have had it as well. You can jump in there and have a look.
Time magazine said the sheer awfulness of the work, one man's legs appear to blend into the shrubbery.
Oh, that is a classic.
Another
look
floats
at this,
in midair several inches above a brick pathway. None of the group appear to be casting shadows.
That is hilarious.
Met
Sorry.
A mixture of indignation and amusement among Chinese netizens.
I'll have to put that up on our website too. That's a classic. So if you've missed it online, come to our website. Have a look.
An associate professor of photo media at Sydney College of the Arts, Marilyn Fairsky, said this would fail Photoshop 101. She said the photo was hilarious.
That's the guy behind the tree.
And described the mistakes as obvious and surreal. That's our odd spot, Andrew.
Scroll down a little bit further. There's another one.
Is it?
Guys floating in midair, yeah.
Oh, they are too. That's very funny.
Do you like it?
Check out the Sydney Morning Herald site, guys. It's fantastic. Just Google it. You'll see it.
Isn't it great?
Where do you find these things? How did you come across that one?
I can't give you all of my odd spot secrets.
All right. Don't forget to go and check out our TV programming and have a look. We want your feedback. TechTalkRadio.com.au/TV. The password is...
Switch.
Thank you.
If there was going to be a Tech Talk Radio television this is what it might look like.
It could be.
Maybe.
So it might look nothing like that.
Let us know if you think this is a good idea.
No tweeting, no Facebooking, don't do anything like that. And we'll probably take it down very shortly. So watch out.
And do send in your comments.
Quick. You got to do it this week, I think.
You said you like books, Lena.
I do.
Did you go to the Emerging Writers Festival?
I did.
Was that good?
It was amazing.
That's good. What happens there?
It was really good.
Tell us about it. It's still going.
In 10 seconds or less.
You go there and you learn about writing from really amazing smart people that you normally don't get access to.
If you're an upcoming blogger.
Wow, that sounds like fun.
It's awesome. Check it out. And they're also publishing an e-book, a real book in real life, in IRL, and an e-book as well. Emergingwritersfestival.org.au.
Thanks, Dr. Ron. Same time next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.